welcome to the Open Paddock Rallycast. This is episode 19 for Tuesday, July 25th, 2017. This week, with WRC still on vacation, we have two rallies in the USA to cover. Rally America's Rally Colorado, and the American Rally Association's New England Forest Rally, which was full of drama and destruction. Sit back, enjoy. This is the Open Paddock Rallycast. Well, good morning, good evening, good afternoon, whenever it is you listen to us. I'm your host, Mike Shaw, and with me, as always, is our good friend and professional co-driver, Ian Holmes. Ian, how are you doing?
Wow, I've never had an intro like that before. I was doing good before. I'm doing even better with that build-up. Thank you very much, sir.
Well, I mean, you do have some good hardware now after our last call, show that was on, right?
Uh-huh, yeah. So
that gives you some street cred.
Yeah. I'm still scoping around for a co-drive for Ojibwe, so if anybody's interested, do I have to pay for the advert just now? Or
Nah, I think we'll let it slide this time. You provide enough additional content, but we'll let it go.
Oh, thank you, sir.
So let's move on. I'll talk about New England at the end there. Let's talk about Rally Colorado. This was one that, when it was first announced, a lot of people were like, yeah, that's been tried before. Is it really going to happen? But then it looks like it definitely was going to happen. But then it got into a little bit of controversy where they had issues getting permits. But because the organizers worked so hard, they were able to move it to a new location and get it going, right?
Yes, that's what it sounds like. Yes, yeah. I mean, when this wasn't this the event that when it first came out, first announced, they talked about a street stage in Denver?
Yeah, that was the thing. They're trying to work with the mayor, I think it was, or something like that. And they're trying to do a downtown stage, something to get the excitement and things like that. Sounds great. Unfortunately, it didn't work out, and I believe one of the main issues also they had with the getting the permits for where they wanted to run it was the fire danger. The time of year, it's pretty tough when you're on that side of the mountains, and it gets dry out, and yeah, the forest fires are definitely an issue, and with cars spitting fire, yeah, you can understand the Forest Service having a bit of an issue with that.
Yeah, probably not a good idea. Yeah. So, but yes, so it sounds like that only like they only had like 3 months to put this rally together in the end. Once they'd got these problems with the Pikes Peak area. So but I hear the city. Oh gosh, it's a city name, isn't it?
Rangeley.
It's Rangeley, is it? Or because this could be Chillicothe all over again, couldn't it? So I'm going with Rangeley. Please feel free to correct us. But anyway, yes, so the people of the city of Rangeley contacted the organisers and suggested that they held the event. So it's great that a city would, like, step forward and offer to put on something like this at such short notice. You know, it's a testament to the people at the city and the organizers as well. You know, it speaks well for rally in the area that people could step forward and do this like this. So that's great.
Yeah, the fact that it seemed like the city actually reached out to them specifically, which was a new thing. That was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know, because you were way across on the other side of the country, so I don't know how much of what was going on in
Colorado. I did not get a chance to follow too much. I mean, obviously there's some things that popped up online. The one thing that I did see was an issue where they had to close the stage due to rain showers that came in, but you know, some people were whining and complaining about that. What do you mean you can race in the rain? Well, if an emergency vehicle can't get down the stage, you can't rally. End of story. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when everybody's talking about, well, the car's going to make it, well, there's still an ambulance that has to be part of this. So, if it can't make it, you no go. So that's just kind of the way it is, unfortunately. But I think it was only that one stage six, I think it was, that they ended up
Stage
having to cancel. So it
yeah,
wasn't too bad.
we're getting ahead of ourselves a bit there. Let's go all the way to the start. I mean, the rally people really made an impression with the people in town right from the beginning. I mean, they actually had a parade of the entrants through the streets of Rangley.
Oh, you're right. I did hear about that. That was really cool.
The park was at an auto museum in the town, and they pulled a tractor out of the auto museum, and they led the cars from the museum through the town to the ceremonial start point. I mean, I saw the video of it. It's really cool. You got this little tractor pottering down the road, and then there's a couple of fire engines ch chirping their sirens, and then the entrance behind them. I mean, that looked great. Great sight. I mean, that makes a great impression on the people. It creates a good impression for the event. It's like some rallies will like tuck themselves away in a hotel out of the way and get on and do things. And no, these guys, they like announce to the town, "We're here, come and see us." Great stuff. So yeah, so there was like, I think they were down to like 37 cars started the event. So I mean, Art Gruska was there, and I guess he was looking to be the overall favourite for the event, and Cameron Steely was probably expected to be favourite in two-wheel drive. So.
One would think. I mean, Art Gruska. I mean, he's got a car that's developed well beyond most everybody else's vehicle they would have. So, it's a full open class. Yeah, that special build that he's got, and it's definitely quick. So,
For
and
sure.
then you look at Cameron, and not only has he been quick when he's racing the ARA and in Rally America, he's also from Colorado and probably knows the area and maybe those roads, so that gives him also a little more of an advantage.
So you see, I know very little about Colorado. I know there's like lots of mountains and stuff out there. So when I saw the photographs of the roads online, and I saw this stunning high altitude desert scenery, I mean, this is how I, to a certain extent, how I envisage Colorado. And I thought, oh my goodness, this looks like this is going to be heckishly good roads to rally. So I mean, it's the event was the stages were all over 5,000 feet. I mean, I'm not a technically minded chap. Is that high enough altitude to affect the power output from the cars because the air gets thinner?
Oh, certainly. Yeah. When
So.
you're up that high, I mean, okay, you're not at like the 14,000 feet that you're gonna be at Pikes Peak,
No.
but it will definitely affect it versus sea level. Yeah. So you'd have mostly the normally aspirated cars having a big trouble there. Even a small turbo would help a ton at 5,000 feet.
Yeah, because it's like you've got your high altitude, you've got the desert. I mean, the conditions probably were pretty tough for the cars and the crews. I mean, I did hear an unverified report of one team who had to pull out due to heat stroke. But I don't know. I'm
Here's
not
another
fully.
thing to throw out there then. If the heat was an issue, one thing that I can help throw this out there, 95 degrees outside in temperature, you can equate to about 3,000 extra feet in altitude because that thins the air as well. So if they're at 5,000 feet plus it's really hot, they're actually racing at 8,000 feet as far as the amount of air getting to the engine.
Yes, it's
Power sapping, definitely. That would be considerable,
So
for sure.
yes, but I mean, there were several people who had problems. I mean, with the I guess it's due to the heat and the altitude. And Kiana Erickson Chang, she had real problems with her Fiesta, and she had real problems both days, and she ended up DNFing.
Oh, bummer.
And our championship leader, Art Gruska, he had problems. I mean, so there's your big... He called it a day after stage four. So he was... So there goes your big favourite overall. Gone before halfway through the first day. So
yeah, I heard he lost oil somehow. I don't know what the issue was, though.
Not up on the technical stuff, but yes. He was gone. So, but I think... This is the thing that always scares me about rallies in like mountain areas. It's like if somebody goes over a ledge, you know. And so the luckiest competitors were like Brad Ames and his co-driver Ryan Kochevar, who on stage three, in Ryan's own words, he had a huge fall with a single impact on the co-driver's door and window frame landing on the wheels. He claims they flew for over 120 feet and went about 70 feet down.
Ow.
Yeah, ouch. But testament to the construction of rally cars, again, as we always like to say about them, you know, both guys were unhurt. You know, they were checked out by the medics. In fact, Ryan took a ride in the ambulance just to be checked out, because I think he got beat up rather badly than Brad, because Brad was the man who got out and put the warning triangles out for everybody. But they are okay, and we're always glad to hear that. And
oh, certainly.
Apparently, once they'd hauled the car back onto the road from this drop, it was drivable.
Now that's funny.
Yep, it just changed the tire, and it was drivable.
So they were able to at least get it back home after the sweeps helped pull it out of the, I guess, back up the cliff. So yep. That's pretty cool. You know, I guess it goes to show just how strong these cars can be.
We always say rally cars are well constructed, and there's your proof.
That's very true. Very true.
We come to like stage six, which you mentioned before. That was like cancelled due to the weather with the flash flooding and lightning. And you don't think about that when we. I never thought about that when we were. I was looking at these pictures of photographs of like high desert. You know, I wasn't thinking of a stage could possibly be stopped for rain and.
You know, one thing you have to think about is, you know, the summertime is actually like monsoon season. Mm-hmm. I know they have that, you know, a little bit farther south of them down in Arizona where I've been before. Yeah. And you basically, every morning that when I was down there, I went down to the Grand Canyon and it was like clockwork. You'd see these, you'd see the clouds start to build up in the morning and they'd turn into these towering thunderstorms of lightning, you know, and then pass over the canyon, you know, and then you'd get like only maybe 10 minutes of rain. It'd dump pretty good though. And then it would just kind of disappear off. And it happened every day. Like where we were on the North Rim, 2 o'clock PM every day, it would happen. Yeah. And it would leave a pretty slick mess behind. It would dried up pretty quick too, but it left a pretty slick mess, especially, you know, depending on the soil they got. But if it can be, if it's all that clay-like stuff that just instantly turns to a slime, you're not going anywhere. Because it's going to cake in the tread, and you might as well be on slicks.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So the cancellation of stage six was good news for Steve Biss and Scott McCarty, because they'd damaged the suspension on their car on stage five, and they'd had to crawl to stage six with the car just like crab walking along the road. But with stage six being cancelled and nobody had to check into a control there, and everybody was sent to the final MTC, they didn't get any time penalties. Mm-hmm. And they were still in the rally, and they could get back to control and get the car repaired ready for the next day. And that's, as we're going to follow the story along, that's going to become quite a lucky decision for them. So, the thing was, A lot of these stages, there were very, very close finishes. When I was checking the timings and everything, and yeah, there were six different stage winners over the 11 stages that were completed, and there were four different overall leaders as well. So at one point, the lead between first and second was like a tenth of a second.
That's impressive.
So you know, we've got some good close racing here, which is what we all want, isn't it? It's really exciting, close racing. So
any new event, you know, you're always worried about how well it's organized and how experienced the people are that are coming out there. If they're able to justifiably say it was within a tenth of a second, they must have their timing crews doing it right too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's always important. So that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we had the leader for the first couple of stages was Sam Albert. Now, isn't Sam a dirtfish instructor?
Yes, I have seen him out there at Dirtfish.
Yeah, and then there was a name that was new to me, very new, because a guy called Jeff Register, who'd been away from rally for 4 years or so, he was back in this event, and he looked like he was the man to beat for a while. He took over the lead on stage three, and by the end of the first day, he was like 8 seconds up, and then he'd got to like 50 seconds ahead when he DNF'd before the start of stage 10 with a broken rear diff. Apparently, he broke it on stage 5. He got damaged on stage 5, but it gave up the ghost on stage 8, and they ended up running stage 9 in front-wheel drive only. And this is... Well, you're not going to get very far in front-wheel drive only, not in some of these cars. That left Biss and McCarthy with this lead of 0.1 of a second. So we were like at 10. We were just starting the 10th of 12 stages, and the lead was like between first and second was like a tenth of a second. So that's pretty cool. That was first to second, which was the Brown, which was David and Michael Brown, and then.
So are they brothers then?
I believe they're brothers. Yes, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And then, so they were 0.1 of a second down. Then Sam Albert and Michelle Miller were like 18 seconds behind them, and Steely and Osborne were 4 seconds behind them. Then there was Serdik and Conti and Adam Short and Danny Norcus. They were like in further 19 and 24 seconds further back. So you had the first four cars within a minute and six cars within a minute and a half of the lead. So that's pretty good.
That's pretty tight.
That is pretty tight. And
now, usually you see that when the stages are pretty short. Do you know the stage lengths that you had out there?
Oh, gosh. Offhand, not off the top of my head. No, I don't.
All right. Well, let's see here. I'm going to actually go over to look at the stages from Rally America site, and it'll tell me.
Yeah.
So let's see here. So length, 10 miles, 10 miles, 12 miles, 10 miles, 10 miles, 12 miles. And then on day two, short little 4 mile stage, and then several 10 milers. So that's actually plenty of length, really, to be honest.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Lots of people are always going to complain about stage length anyway. They're going to say, why wasn't it longer? There's always going to be somebody who's not happy with the stage length.
You always want more. That's it.
That's it. Yeah. You always want more. So, yeah. So now we are getting into the last three stages of the event. And once the lead was chopping and changing all the time, apparently. So, after stage 10, Biss and McCarthy, who were leading by like 0.1 of a second at the start of the stage, their lead grew to like 5.5 seconds. And then on stage 11, the Brown brothers, they took the lead over by 9 seconds because Biss and McCarthy and Albert and Miller were like were slowing and falling back, and so at the end, by the end of stage, the end of the event, that Dave and Michael Brown won their first event. If this was only their second attempt at a rally, and they won Rally Colorado.
Well, congratulations to them. That's a big ask for your second event ever.
Uh-huh, yeah.
What class are they in?
They were in... they are Super Production.
Excellent.
Yep, the first three cars were all Super Production. Brown and the Brown brothers, then Serdik and Conti, and Biss and McCarthy. All in Subaru Imprezas, of course.
Open class. You just didn't have. Sam Albert was definitely in the open class, if I recall. Of course, Art Grushka, but he was out early.
Yes. So in two-wheel drive, Brad Morris and Ryan Scott triumphed over Cameron Steely and Preston Osborne. Because apparently on one of the stages, Cameron went a little wide on a corner and got stuck on a berm for 6 minutes.
Oh, man. Oh, the trials of two-wheel drive.
Oh,
getting high-centered and stuck.
Oh, ouch. Yeah, so... But all in all, you know, this whole event sounds really cool. You know, from the parade through the town at the start, and what looked like really exciting roads to be rallying on, it looks like Rally Colorado was something of a success.
I'd have to agree. I mean, you know, a lot of people were, you know, kind of upset that maybe it conflicted with New England, although. You know, more I think the West Coast people went to maybe Colorado. That wouldn't have gone to New England anyway. New England still had a pretty good, you know, car count. So, the key to the first year, you know, it's good to kick it off well. You know, the key to success, of course, is years two and three, right?
Yeah.
How does it hold up? Yeah. But I mean, yeah, good set of mileage out there. You know, I just did a quick count of it, 120 stage miles. That's comparable to most rallies. So, looked like they had some different character out there. I remember seeing some onboard video that our good friend Stephen Harrell had posted showing the switchbacks back and forth going down one of the descents there, and that looked cool. I mean, just some gorgeous country out there. I mean, it's freaking Colorado. What's not to like, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a part of the country that I've yet to get to, and. Well, looking at what I've seen from the Rally Colorado photographs, it's a part of the country that I want to get to pretty quickly.
Well, there you go. So for next year's Rally Colorado, we have a co-driver that would love to go. And... right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I must say, you know, again, just... The thing I keep saying is, you know, the more rally, the better.
Yeah.
It does kind of suck when rallies step on each other's foot for weekends. That said, there's only so many weekends in the summer months. We tend to, even though rally cars can run at any time of the year, they tend to run most racing during the summer because that's when people are off more vacation time, off from work, and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, and nobody really wants to be out there in the rain. It's hard to get volunteers for that, too.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff, so.
Yeah. Yes, more rally. More rally is what we need. It's, I've said this before, you know, we were all kind of, like, worried when ARA turned up, and we wondered how it was going to affect rally in America, and it seems like, to be honest, it's affecting it in a positive way across the board. That's exciting.
Exactly, you know, and the more rallies you are, just the more exposure the sport gets in the States. You know, people talk about too much diversity and things like that. You know, go look at Great Britain, and you guys have how many different, I mean, the BRC is not the only organization doing rallies there, right? You guys got a ton of different organizations, sanctioning bodies doing rally.
I lose count. BRC,
BTRDA or whatever it is.
BRTDA or the MSA. And let's not forget that, like, Great Britain is like a much, much smaller country than the States. I mean, the States can legitimately support, because of its size, it can legitimately support several different organizing bodies. But yeah, in England, it's like, yeah, there's three or four different organizing bodies there, rally just thrives.
Exactly. So, that said, I think we can do just fine here.
Yeah.
So moving on to that other sanctioning body, the American Rally Association. Let's talk some New England, shall we?
Oh, please do.
I was there on the ground with Matt Kalish, and Matt's busy, but, doing that official stuff since he's an official employee of ARA. But I was, of course, allowed to go along and do the media stuff, which I so very much enjoy. This has been just a ball of a year for me, visiting these different places that I've never been to before. We've got just amazing different areas for doing rally in the States. You really do. It's a long haul, no joke. The flights, to get all the way over there, it's pretty ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I'm literally going from Portland to Portland. You can't get much farther than that, right? It was, I got there and just taking in the surroundings. First thing I did notice, they do have humidity, which is not something we have much out west. It wasn't too bad.
We have plenty of that in the Midwest. You might suffer a bit when you come for a Jibway.
Yeah, I just might. I'll have to do my best to try and hide away from that as I can. Totally worth it. It wasn't that rough, to be honest. It was about 85 degrees the first couple of days there, which felt a little more like 95 if you were in the sun and with the humidity there. But if you stayed in the shade and whatnot, and kept a breeze on you, there was a little bit of a breeze blowing, so it wasn't too bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Could have been a lot worse, that's for sure. But, aside from the temperatures there and the surroundings, Matt and I went and we recce'd the stages on Thursday. And that was great to get a view of what the stages would look like. Concord Pond, when they say that this is what's as close to Finland as we get in the U.S., I completely understand now. That road has so many little crests and dips and little turns over crest, so cars going maybe a little sideways mm-hmm. in the air. It's a gem. It really is. It's only 5 miles, maybe a little more than 5 miles, I think it is. And just fun. What they did different this year is they ran Concord Pond twice in a row as the very... So before any service, it was basically you ran Concord Pond, and then they kind of looped around from the finish and back around to the start, mm-hmm. and then they ran it a second time.
Yeah.
And then they went to the service.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That made sense, considering where Concord Pond is... logistically is like down in the from where the service park is. It's basically, I'll just say it was southeast of where the service park was, whereas all the other stages were way north, like an hour drive north, so really long transit.
Oh my.
Yeah, which is why on day two they moved the service park over to Errol, New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. Which actually, it's right over. It's actually one of the stages that's pretty cool. It actually crosses the border on the stage. I think it's stage 6 that does that, or stage 5, which is the first stage of the day on Saturday, actually crosses over from New Hampshire into Maine on the stage itself, which is kind of neat. You can think of it kind of like WRC Sweden, where they cross over for a bit into Norway, right in front of Petter Solberg's home.
Uh-huh, yeah, I was just going to mention that.
Exactly. So that kind of thing. Neat stages out there. That one, basically, there's a series of stages that all encompass a lake. So there's a big lake out there in the north, and it's like you go basically traveling about 5 miles of stage, And after the stage finished, you go forward a little ways, you know, maybe past a campground, and then you start the next stage. And this connecting road, all is like split up into like four different stages, and or three different stages. And then there was, I think, a fourth one on the that was kind of off away from the lake. But in general, most of it kind of encompassed around this giant lake out there. It'd be interesting if they could someday just link them all together to make one really long stage, right? It'd be like our up here in the Northwest where we've got our famous Nawatzel stage. You could almost do that there because it's just so much. You know, but going back to kind of the environment there, not only was it these crests and things like that you have, that can catch you out if you got the note wrong, but rocks. Big rocks.
Yeah,
The
no,
kind
not.
that make you cringe.
Yeah, I was expecting to see rocks in the photographs of Rally Colorado stages. I wasn't expecting to see as many rocks as I did on the New England Forest Rally stage pictures. I mean, there were some honking great big rocks.
Oh yeah, these are car breaking rocks. And the thing is also just off the driving line, you know, if you cut, or if you go wide, you know, you see that, you know, plenty of green grasses and shrubs and stuff hiding in that stuff, even bigger ones, you know, and you can't see them. So yeah, definitely a something to watch out for. But you know, everybody, one of my favorite quotes of the entire weekend came from Travis Pastrana, where he said, "We're just going to try and keep the machinery between the greenery." That was a new one for me.
Oh, well, we need that. We need that one on a t-shirt.
Yeah, right? Keep the machinery between the greenery? Yeah. That was a pretty good one. Anyhow, lots of drama. So let's talk about the rally itself. You know, if you want to look up the results, of course, you can go to the American Rally Association.org's website, and go to the event, and then there's a results link, and it'll kind of tell you all that stuff. But some of the interesting things that came out from this one. Number one is actually at the very beginning. There was concerns about the 80 mile per hour limit stuff. This is an event that has some chicanes in there trying to slow down the rally. With the cars as they are today, they weren't sure who was gonna, you know, is it gonna matter between Travis and David? Are they gonna be bumping up against that limit? And then it's like the stage didn't matter. So they were concerned about that and did an inquiry in the beginning, or you know, or asked questions about, you know, whether there was the 80 mile per hour limit thing that had been used before with the previous organization was going to stand here at New England, because it is a very fast rally. Turns out it would, and that 80 mile per hour limit thing, though, really kind of comes from the insurance side of things, not so much the sanctioning body's issue, right? So they still wanted to have that. They did bump into it a couple of times. David did a calculation of that stage and tried to, you know, keep his car where he'd be right at that limit on the first run of Concord Pond. Whereas Travis ran it just full blast and went right to the limit. And turns out that David actually lost a little time. So then the next run through, I think both of them were at the limit. So yeah, kind of negated things a little bit, but it didn't look like it affected. They were close. I don't think it was a huge change from what their time would have been, although you know, there would have been a difference between them, obviously, at some point. But I think it would be a matter of a couple seconds, not, you know, several seconds, if you know what I mean. Barry McKenna, oh man, that fiesta! So Concord J Pond has this infamous jump, and you go over this crest, kind of like it goes a little dip and then this jump. I got to go out there for the first time, and holy cow. Honestly, going over it in your car, you're like, yeah, okay, it just kind of rolls over. They're not going to go that far. Yeah, at 100 miles an hour, yeah, they will.
I watched your Facebook live stream, and I mean, you were a good distance from the crest,
Yes, we
your
were.
commentating position, weren't you? And he touched down nearly in front of you.
They touched down past us.
Past
Well
you.
past. Oh yeah. Oh yeah, they touched down either parallel to us or past us. Seahorn, I think, touched down about parallel to us, whereas Barry McKenna, I think he touched down past us. It was
Really? Wow.
that car. It's like it had spring-loaded legs or something like that. Did you notice that suspension travel in that jump?
Oh, yeah.
Just insane on that car.
I'll tell you what else I noticed was the look on your face when he went past.
Was that on film? Oh man, yeah, my jaw just dropped. It was insane. Oh my, yeah, I was just in awe. I'm like, holy cow.
But yeah, that was fun to watch. That was more good Facebook Live streaming from you guys. I appreciated that.
But you know, Concord Pond wasn't going to be something that decided the rally, to be
No.
honest. It's a lot of fun for the fans. One of the other competitors was saying that they've never been to a stage where every single corner there is fans. They let fans get onto the stage and hike in a bit. You know, there's an embankment, and they get up on top of that to watch the
Yeah.
cars. So it gives them some safety. And from what I heard, there was no safety issues or anything like that. So yeah, there it was really exciting. The driver's like, "Wow, this is really cool." So, yeah, just another one of those things that makes the New England Forest Rally a little bit special, and was really a lot of fun to see. So, yeah, moving out of Concord Pond, you know, things pretty close, you know, between the top guys. Nothing really to shout about, especially with some of the 80-mile power limit stuff. Then you get into the serious stages. The next two stages they run are, oh, I had it up here just a second ago. They go up north and they do South Arm, and then they do a turnaround, and they do what's called Icicle Brook. And Icicle Brook is mostly the same stage, but then it's extended with a little off turn off from that, and you know, just a little bit longer. So it's kind of half of it's a reverse course with a little offshoot. The first run through South Arm, kind of the dramatic story that came out of that was Travis Nies. Travis has been running with an issue that he had at, gosh, I think it was when he ran Idaho. He doesn't have any wheel scrapers on his car. Do you know what wheel scrapers are?
No, enlighten me.
Wheel scrapers, basically think of a manufactured piece of metal connected to, you know, I guess the suspension system or whatever. It sits inside the wheel, and just like a little bit of clearance between it and the rim, and it's just a blade. Think of it just like a shovel. And it just stays there, and as the tire rotates around, if rocks and gravel, you know, and dirt and stuff start caking up in there, it shaves it off, right? Well, Travis had a problem where he lost brake calipers out at Rally Idaho, took him out of the event. Well, when he came out to this event, he'd gotten the car fixed up, but he didn't have time to put in these wheel scrapers. So he's still running without them. With about 2 miles left, I guess he gets a hole in, I think it was a hole in the hydraulic system or for the brakes. Anyways, brake fluid pumps out and they have no brakes. None for the last 2 miles. Like, just goes to the floor. You know, Travis is like almost white as a ghost, you know, in the end there, 'cause just like, you know, it's hard to drive a car without any brakes. And you know, they get through it, they get to the end, and this is where Rally is just so awesome. They get to the finish and they're at the turnaround, and Travis's like, "You know what? I'm just gonna have to call it quits. I can't drive through that stage without any brakes. We're done. We're gonna have to DNF here." And Krista tells him, "No, you know what? We're surrounded by the top rally drivers and co-drivers in the country here. Let's go out and ask somebody if they can help us." So she gets out and she starts asking around. First of all, his top competitor for the championship in restricted open four-wheel drive, Jeff Seahorn, Jeff comes over and says, "There's no way you're going to call it quits. We're going to fix this, damn it. We have an hour on this turnaround, and we're going to get people to help us." Krista finds that Travis Pastrana and Robbie Durant have some brake fluid in the back of their Subaru, which they lent them. Adam Kimmett, who's in a normally aspirated open four-wheel drive Subaru, he had a tool set in the back of his car. ACP comes over out of his production four-wheel drive, you know, the Focus RS that he's in, which is another story in of itself. He comes over, and you know, and of course Jeff is there, and several other hands just jumping in. They were able to basically, I think, just cap it off. They're able to put in new brake fluid, bleed the brakes, and get it set up so he had three brakes instead of no brakes. And he was ready to go in time for the start of the return loop down Icicle Brook. Now, how cool is that? That all these different teams all jumped in to help a fellow competitor. I mean, that's just damn cool.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about it time and time again, don't we? It's like there's always at every event, there's always something. There's always some story of how one competitor receives help and assistance from a fellow competitor, whether he's in a different class or whether they are like running neck and neck for a title. That everybody wants to help each other. It's great.
Yeah, definitely. Anyways, that was one of my favorite stories of the entire rally. Another interesting trick that I had not heard of before. Well, I think I heard this once before, never seen it happen. Raman Alagaman was on that fourth stage, so that was the Icicle Brook running back towards as they're heading back. Had clutch issues with that gorgeous Porsche 911 he was in. Oh my gosh!
It's a beautiful car,
Yeah,
isn't it?
beautiful car, sounds beautiful. But they're having issues with it, and he used an old shade tree mechanic trick where they poured coke in with the gearbox because it was stuck. It was stuck in gear. I guess it wouldn't, and I guess it can like help you relieve things, and it'll burn off or something like that. It was definitely an interesting bit.
Well, it makes me worry about drinking Coke if that's what it'll do to
Well, see what it'll do to a dirty penny. It'll
a
eat all the stuff off it. So yeah, exactly. But anyways, he ended up getting using that old trick to get his car going again. So he was able to at least make it back to service. But you know, the big drama that happened, of course, was on Special Stage 4, where both David Higgins and Travis Pastrana went over this the small crest. It was more of a drop than it was like a jump, which went into a compression. So basically, you know, basically kind of went back uphill. And in that section, the way that they hit, it really compressed down hard. And David said himself that for the next like mile after that, the car just hitting so hard on that landing, he was even a little dazed, and just kind of wasn't on his notes like he should. He just kind of a little out of it. When Travis went over it with Robbie, unfortunately, Robbie got injured. They hit so hard that you know, it seems like the Robbie ended up with a what would be we think is a compressed disc. I don't know what the doctor's reports are. Don't quote me on that or anything like that. But they get to the stage end. Travis is really worried because there was a couple miles left, and he thought he might have to pull over. And Robbie's barely breathing because of the pain, and you know, tells me to just get to the finish. And at that point, the stage workers at the end, you know, they agree with Travis. You know, he's not looking good. And from what I gather, I wasn't out there at this stage, so again, take a little bit with a grain of salt. But from what I gather, they deemed it proper to put a hold on the stage. They did not Red Cross the stage. That's the key thing. People said something about a Red Cross. That did not happen on stage 4. What they wanted to do is put a hold on the stage, and because it was the last stage of the day anyway, and they're going to roll the ambulance down to take a look at Robbie, and then maybe they could start it back up again. Well, the Icicle Book stage is about 16 miles, so you know, you're talking about rough gravel roads and things like that. It's not gonna be a short amount of time for a ambulance to make it down there. But you know, it's not like Robbie was unconscious or anything. He was, you know, finally talking a little bit. Best I heard is that the ambulance made it about halfway there or partway there before Robbie himself said, "You know what? I think I can make it on transit back to service." He felt okay enough for that. His legs were moving, so it wasn't like he was paralyzed at that point. So everybody kind of agreed to let that happen. They radioed to the ambulance, which then turned around and went back towards the start. By the time the ambulance got back to the start again, it seems like, I guess, they hit some bogey time for the stage where they're just like, you know what? we're canceling the stage. So it wasn't a red cross, but it was a hold that went unfortunately too long. Mm-hmm. Is the best I could verbalize what happened there. Kind of frustrating for those that didn't get a chance to race through it. Ramana Lagerman was one of the people caught out in the fact that he got that his car working again, got it going from after being stuck, and the he was talking to his mechanic, I guess over a radio or over a cell phone if he had a signal, and the guys back in the back at the crew thought it was a red cross, and so he just stayed put and never moved again, mm-hmm. which unfortunately meant that he just had time to stacking up, hurting his times. Turns out it wouldn't have been a factor anyway, because that darned clutch problem came back again. So they tried to fix it in service,
yeah.
and it just it wasn't a solution. The solution they came up with didn't solve it, and they ended up having to DNF on the next day. So tough for them. Other significant things, Lachlan O'Sullivan in production class, you would have thought he would kind of dominate with his experience stuff out there. Fortunately, they had a turbo issue. They had no boost. So they had to momentum drive the whole thing. And then, of course, in doing so, one of the chicanes that were put up, they blew right through it. Got a one-minute penalty on that one right there for not even trying. And I think they tapped one of the other ones, got a 10 seconds or something like that. Anyways, but, yeah, penalties kind of hurt him on that one. Barry McKenna, they were... Actually, they were doing really fast at first, but then all of a sudden you see this, like, 7 minutes delay on one of the stages. Turns out what happened is, in quick diagnosis by the team, they had their ECU was overheating. Apparently the Fords is something that they know about because in their Mark II Escort, they ran into the same problem. And Barry thought this is something that had been resolved by, I'm guessing the chip would probably come from M Sport for this thing, the ECU setup, I don't know. But anyways, overheated, and what they did is they just poured ice on the darn thing. All weekend, they were going and buying ice packs and strapping them in between each stage to strap on a new ice pack right onto the ECU. Yeah. Solved the problem, well. You know? So there you go. You know, so a lot of drama just on that first day. Some frustration for the drivers that didn't get to finish stage four, of course, because of the time that it took and them canceling that one. But still a lot more stage miles to go. I mean, there was only 30. The first day was only about, 38 miles-ish, 37.5. And whereas the next day was like 74 miles. So... Yeah, not a huge amount of the rally lost by one stage there. Moving on to what happened with Robbie. They started taking apart the car all around him to try and get him out of the car. His legs were moving, but he wasn't able to just like pick himself out of the car. He was hurting so bad. Eventually, he did get out, and he was actually feeling better by moving a little bit, but it hurt really bad, obviously, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. Again, best as I know, medical professionals did look at him. I believe I remember seeing an ambulance did pull into the service park and looked at him there and deemed that nothing was broken, but it was likely something that was compressed, and he was done. So now Subaru is like going, well, that's it for Travis. Well, let's look at the rule book. And here we get into some areas where the rules aren't exactly clear. It talks about how a driver and co-driver can swap for illness or injury. So does that mean they can only swap with each other, or does it mean swap out? It does not clearly say.
Mm-hmm.
So of course Subaru files an inquiry to have the stewards look at it, because they're basically an inquiry, you're just questioning, right?
Yeah.
This isn't a protest where you have to pay for it and all that stuff. This is just like, hey, this is what we want to do. Now, this is kind of funny because in finding a replacement, Pastrana ended up calling up Greg Dorman. And if I remember right, he said something along the lines of like, yeah, I found Greg in a bar when I called him. He's going to go kayaking with his girlfriend, but he ends up sitting next to me instead. You know, but yeah, he was gonna go kayaking instead. Now, Greg Dorman, by the way, is like his day job is doing marketing and stuff like that. He's one of the people. He works for Subaru.
Yeah.
But he has co-driven quite a bit in his past, and more recently, the first round. What was the first round that was in Canada there? Not Beta Charlet, the one in the snow. Anyway, he co-drove for Bill Bacon. And they ended up winning their class. So, you know, obviously he can run at speed, at least in the snow. But Travis Pastrana in the open class car, that's a little bit different pace, right?
Yeah.
But he was there to jump in the silly seat. The stewards deemed that it was okay to do that. They talked with the closest competitors to them in that class, and everybody seemed like they were okay with it. So they let it happen. One of the things that they did say is they specifically wanted Travis and Greg to start third on the road. They were originally starting second on the road, but start behind Barry and Leon Jordan because they weren't sure the pace that they'd do with a substitute co-driver. They didn't want them being overrun. So, well, it turns out he's not slow.
No.
he ended up doing quite well, and... You know, it took a couple of stages. They were taking it easy at first, but Greg got into the groove. David Higgins, Craig Drew, they ended up actually having some intercom issues. And when they saw that they were at least close to that time, they're like, well, this isn't too bad. We're not too far off. But, you know, then finding out that there was the issues for David and Craig, they're like, well, maybe we can push a little bit here. And unfortunately, I think it was one of the stages on that first loop on day two, they got a little ahead of themselves. Greg couldn't read the notes fast enough.
Yeah.
Plus, there's, you know, everybody's notes are a little different. He doesn't know the style of Travis as well, right? And all those notes. He's got some unique words in there and whatnot that him and Robbie have worked on together. And anyway, so he got a little behind, and eventually, you know, he had to lift off a little bit and catch up. But, you know, overall, though, their times were very good. I mean, they were within 10 seconds of David until the final stage of that first loop where with a couple miles left, Travis is in a corner and all of a sudden the car's, you know, he's going to turn. All of a sudden the car just goes straight and he's like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. The power steering went.
Oh my.
Yeah. And so he's like, wait a minute, I can still turn it. And he's just muscling it. And I don't know. Have you ever driven a power steering car with the power steering broken?
No, but I've driven plenty of cars that don't have power steering.
Yeah, it's harder. It's even harder. non-power steering cars, when you're not moving, they suck, right?
Yeah.
You know, you're like sitting there in the parking lot and you want to turn the wheel ahead of time and you're like, yeah, think about that kind of hard feeling while you're moving. That's about what it's like.
Uh-huh.
But they made it to service, got that all fixed up. Then they were out for the next loop, and that's where the big drama happened. The penultimate stage of the rally is... Hold on, I'm going to have to pull it up here, see? The B-17, second run of the B-17 road, it's about 5.6 miles. There's apparently a big hole out there, or a big rock, and David started pushing really hard because Travis actually wasn't so far behind him, and they went wide, clapped a big rock, and it just ripped the entire right rear off of David Higgins and Craig Drew's car. There's plenty of pictures online. You guys have probably all seen it that listen to this. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen that kind of damage in a long time at a rally here in the States. That was pretty massive hit. Travis apparently hit the same rock, but only got a puncture out of it, and I think maybe a little bit of bent suspension, but not nearly the damage that David had. Yeah. And here he is. He's got a substitute co-driver. And David's damaged. If David won this rally, then David won the whole championship for the year. So you're talking about down to the wire here, right? David scrapes his way, Sebastian Loeb 2005 style from WRC Mexico, 26 miles down the road to service in Errol. That's not something we see too often. Here we get into kind of the rules thing or whatever. It's like, you know, what's the right way to go if you have only three wheels on your car? There is no rule, as far as I know, in the rule book that says you can't do that. The other side of it, though, is we need to probably be good stewards to the areas we're racing in. I love the press-on regardless thing, though. The fact that they made it. These roads are pretty beat up because the harsh winters they have there. So to me, I'm like, no big deal. But I can also understand if locals saw that happening, they could maybe be a little upset. And the whole not in my backyard problem that we have in the States, I might want to be careful about that. So I don't know if that's yet another thing that might end up being reviewed and rules changed. You know that in the WRC, they changed their rule, right? Do you remember when? Right. So Granholm, he wanted to scrape his way back to, I think this was like 2007 or something like that. He wanted to make his way back to service in Wales Rally GB, right? And the police officer, you can't drive like that. And Granholm keeps arguing with him, right? No, I can drive like this. And he's like, no. He's trying to say, like, legally, I won't let you. Granholm's like, no, I can drive. I'm a very good driver, you know? You don't understand. I can drive this. Oh, it's freaking hilarious. And, you know, Granholm ended up DNFing that event. You know, same thing here is that, you know, you might end up running a situation where some areas might not want, you know, somebody to be able to scrape their way along, where other events people don't. Well, they're probably going to make a rule that kind of fits the majority of places you go. I know that in the WRC, their rule change that they did is you have to have four rotating wheels. I don't know if it requires rubber on those wheels because we've seen many a time somebody on a rim, right, rolling their way along. But I know you have to have, but you have to have four rotating wheels. There's a video of Stefan Lefebvre last year in WRC Poland where he did a fix where his left rear tire after running into a chicane, a hay bale chicane, it's just all like towed out and just barely rotating and just kind of skidding along, but it's still rolling as it's skidding. And so he was able to make it back to service. So, yeah. Well, like I said, we'll have to see if anything comes of that. But I, you know, it was awesome for David and Craig to be able to at least make it back instead of just pulling over. You know, certain perseverance there. I think they did have a small fire that happened from it, but Barry McKenna was right there and used their little fire extinguisher they had on board and put it out for them and just helped follow them the whole way back. So, you know, again, that camaraderie between competitors, make sure everybody's safe, and just kind of had their back, which was really neat. So, the issue, though, was when they went to go to that final stage, after all this drama that happened, the separation between David and Travis was 1 second with one stage left. Yes, exactly 1 second. That was it. So now they're having to do repairs, but they got a 30-minute service before they go to the final stage, which is the North Road stage. It's only 4 miles long. What happens with David's car is they just don't have the time to fix that much damage. So they just remove the rear drive shafts, make it, you know, get the brakes cleaned up so at least he has brakes. Get, you know, get as much suspension put back together as they can. And then they, you know, so he's got brakes, he's got power, but only to the front wheels. Better than nothing. Again, this is for the championship if he wins right here. If Travis wins, it goes on to Ojibwe. And of course, as we all know what happened now, for those who've been watching online, you know, Travis did end up winning that stage and ended up winning the event with Greg sitting next to him. So it's his first overall win, and it was pretty cool to see that happen for them. Rules be damned or whatever, it was damn fun to watch that. It was very dramatic. They were just having so much fun just because it's just so unbelievable. Travis, when he came into the final time control, he's like, I think I won. I'm not sure, but you know, he's trying to just go through all the times. He's like, really? That happened? You know, he was in shock. He was r literally in shock. The other last little bit of drama was that David's car was actually underweight. So what they'll do sometimes, they'll weigh the cars at the end of the rally to make sure that they still meet spec. Well, when they removed the drive shafts and whatnot for the last stage, they didn't compensate for that weight being gone. So when they weigh the cars at the end, yep. So I guess Subaru had a little bit of a lesson that they learned is you, if you're going to remove something, either, you know, take the broken part and you strap it into the back, So you can still keep that weight. I mean, it's kind of their own fault for being that close to the weight limit, right? They didn't leave enough buffer. So based on that, they should have put in some sort of compensating weight to keep it equal, and they didn't. But it turned out there was kind of no penalty there. They'll have something probably written in the rules that'll more specify what that kind of penalty is, which I think that was kind of missing. But another thing about all these rules and stuff, it's the first year for the ARA, and you're gonna find these little holes that are gonna get poked at. And the reason why Subaru, I think it most often happens with them, they've got the manpower and experience over the years to be able to look at the rule book and find a hole, and they're the ones that are willing to press it. I think most competitors aren't going to press the issue, right? And they don't have the time to look at, or the maybe the years of experience to look at each rule and argue each one of these points. So, I think that's kind of more of what happened. It wouldn't have changed the results that much anyway. In the end, it was Travis on top with Dave and Craig next to them, a little frustrated, but hey, they at least made it to the end with both Subarus there. And again, this was the cool thing, Jeff Seehorn and Karen Jankowski, third overall again. So it seems like every rally that they finish, anyways, without the DNF this year, they're on the overall podium.
You can't beat that. I mean, that's consistency.
Yeah, that's certainly big consistency for them. So I know I talked mostly about, the top guys there, but that's kind of where a lot of the drama was for the weekend. The other excitement was seeing the Ford Focus RS out there with ACP and Jeremy Wimpy behind, working that car. It won the production four-wheel drive class. They had a couple of little issues, a little electrical gremlin they had to run down, some things like that. But for the most part, that car worked. I'd like to see it at Ojibwe. I'd like to see that program expand. I know Tim would love to make like a kit so other people can turn theirs into rally cars. But it's going to take a while, work with Ford and see what can happen with that. The other cool story for me in production four-wheel drive was Alvin Fong, Black Box Rally Team. He was right up there on pace with Lachlan and ACP, and I forgot to mention Lachlan, unfortunately, on that Saturday's loop of stages, he had a lot of time to make up, right? And he unfortunately had a roll, and they were out. So sorry, Lachlan, that kind of sucks.
I saw your interview on Saturday morning with Alex Wong, and he seemed a little bit embarrassed to be like running second in his class.
He did, and I mean, just because, I guess I don't think he felt that he was at that pace yet. And A, he drove smart. B, he drove quick, right? He's got a natural talent to him, I think. Even ACP was, surprised. Like, I haven't driven for a couple of years, and here's all these young guys that come out of nowhere, and they're challenging me. What the hell? Actually, the post-event press conference was probably another one of my favorites. We got some good detail from a lot of the drivers. And one thing that's really cool about Alvin Fong's story is he was a volunteer at this event at New England. His heroes that he was following was Lachlan O'Sullivan and ACP. And here he is competing in within them, right? And now he gets on the podium right next to ACP, in second place. The guy couldn't have been happier. It was really cool to see. So, from volunteer to being on the podium with your heroes, that's just freaking cool, man.
Who's going to play him in the movie then?
Right?
There's a movie here.
Now let's talk about championship stuff just real quick. Right now, what we've got is we've already got our first American Rally Association national champion. Of course, it's Ryan Millen, Rhianna Gelsomino. As soon as they went out of the first start time control on day one, that 1 point for starting the rally, boom, they sealed the championship. So the Toyota guys actually did a thing where they were just waiting outside of time control with a bunch of bottles of champagne and sprayed the cars that went by. I don't know how well that did all that sticky stuff in dealing with the dust on Concord Pond, but but they did already seal up the championship. So congratulations to them. Dominant job.
There's a video of that somewhere.
There is. It's a shaky one that Eric Nelson took. He did not have our gimbaled stabilizer with him. But we'll have to teach him how to use one of those.
I'm pleased for them because they basically dominated that all the way through the season, haven't they? So
they haven't lost a round yet.
Yeah, so.
So they're at 5-5. There's one round left, and they could have an undefeated season, which would be just very impressive. Mm-hmm. So that's that one sealed up in the, it now goes down to the last one between David and Travis. David leads by, has 100 points with Travis at 95, if my calculations are correct. But because there's a drop that either of them can do, it's almost like they're tied. So it's gonna be tooth and nail there. That's,
oh boy. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's gonna be going to be a good finale to the season here in Minnesota in a few weeks.
It is. And, you know, that one's got some quick, pretty open roads there. And I expect actually Barry McKenna to be one that could be a spoiler between those two if he's good. You know, he keeps increasing that pace. He had several what would have been stage wins. But again, the 80-mile-per-hour limit kind of kicked in a couple of those, but he was definitely on pace with those guys in a lot of places. So looking forward to seeing what Ojibwe will bring us. Along with that will be, Jeff Seahorn versus, Travis Neese and Krista Skoukas. There's 3 points between them right now. It's, Travis Neese has the lead in the restricted open, and Jeff Seahorn and Karen Jankowski are sitting second. Mm-hmm. Whoever ends up winning, you know, finishing ahead of the other is going to win the championship there. So a lot of exciting stuff going on with the production four-wheel drive. It seems like there's been a different driver that's won each one, and there's not been a lot of production four-wheel drive competitors going to every event, which makes it difficult to figure out who's going to win this one. So I guess Ojibwe, August 25th through the 26th, Detroit Lakes, Minnesota.
Uh-huh. Just
a month to go. Dun dun dun. Let the clock begin. All right, I rambled on enough about that rally, but there was a lot of stuff that happened, man.
Well, yeah, I mean, you were there, you were on the ground. You've told me a whole load of stuff that that I wasn't aware of from following people's updates on teams updates on Facebook and stuff like that. So I mean, being on the ground there you brought a whole new aspect to the coverage. So
appreciate that.
Yeah. So. You and Matt did a grand job on the jump at Concord Pond. So, yeah, it was great.
Well, now you got to get around and watch all the other videos that we've got on the American Rally Association's Facebook page, because we've got a whole bunch of stuff out there. So, yeah. It's really getting cool where, again, the teams are getting more comfortable with us walking around with the camera. And yes, we do focus more on the national competitors than we do on the regional competitors. We try and get out the regionals when we can. There's only so much time in the service, though, so it makes it hard. You know, anyhow. Another shout-out, another fun competitor that was good to see out there, Summit Punjabi. Now I'm going to lose who his co-driver was, because they were a ton of fun out there. Matt James. Summit and Matt, those two guys, they were having a ball out there. It's their first time at New England, and they ended up third on the podium in production four-wheel drive. So another shout-out to those guys. They're very, very happy, and it's their first time on a national podium. So very jovial and happy people for getting that done. They know that probably wouldn't have happened with Lachlan crashing out, and they don't want to wish bad on anybody, but, you know... that's the brakes of rally. It's tough out there, and they held it together.
you've got to get to the finish line. That's
yep.
That's the first prerequisite, you know. It's like, doesn't matter how fast you go, if you don't get to the finish line, then you're not gonna score any points. So
exactly. So everybody out there, though, so generous, wonderful rally. The organizers, some of the fans I met, things like that. Just great people, all working hard. The place there, the lodge at Sunday River, the people that worked there, they love having the rally there. You can tell. They just bend over backwards to help you get stuff done. You love it when there's an event that everybody wants to make it happen, make it run well. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, anyways, I've rambled on too long. Any final thoughts after this weekend of USA Rally?
No, because we don't want to look back at what's happened. We want to look forward, because forward is it's where it's all happening in just a couple of weeks. So it's like place your bets and make a wager with your friends. Now, who's gonna run out champion in?
It's gonna be a tight one, I think. You know, and, you know, Seahorn's got his mechanical issues that he's had. I know he was nursing a little bit of a water leak in his car, but it was something that they were able to manage throughout this rally and still finish third overall. Could affect them at Ojibwe? Don't know. But, you know, Nice is always consistently a finisher. So you never know what's going to happen there either in that class. So a lot to look forward to in that racing. One thing that I was going to mention, though, is, hey, WRC Finland is this week.
Absolutely. Yes, sir.
And our very own Dylan Van Wey is going to be competing there.
Excellent.
That's right. So we have our American that's in the JWRC will be in Finland. I think these are going to be roads that might suit him a lot better. He likes going fast, obviously, but... you know, I think he was having a really tough time in some of the technical twisty bits of some of the other rallies that he did. Of course, the tarmac stuff was really hard for him since it was the first for him. So we'll have to see how his times do. I mean, I'm not going to expect him to be right up there at the top with, like, Solans or whatever and some of those guys that have previous experience at this event. But I think he can definitely have a good showing. And so far, one thing he's done is he's always brought it home, right?
Yes.
He's been a finisher. And that's, as you said... You know, it doesn't matter how fast you are if you can't bring it home.
Yeah. And he's getting valuable rally experience. He's competing in a totally different class of field to if he would be running in the ARA or Rally America or what have you or whatever. So his abilities can only improve from the experience he's getting this year.
Definitely. Yeah. I'd like to see what his future program is from this, but the season's not over yet, so we'll have to see how it all pans out. But so excited to see an American that's made his way over there. Actually, here is one last other thing I'm going to say, and I'm sorry if I'm running on so long. There was actually a guy visiting from Mexico at New England Forest Rally who's actually with the NACM Rally Championship. I think he was the head of it. He actually goes to, like, the FIA meetings in Europe and whatnot. So NACM is what Dylan Van Wey almost won, but lost by, like, half a second or something like that championship. But he still ended up getting the ability to go into the JWRC because the other guy that did win it, I think, couldn't come up with the funds. And I know it's a scholarship program thing, but it's kind of a thing where you still have to put in some of your own money, kind of a match or whatever, right? Anyhow, that said, the NACM, they're wanting to potentially have a U.S. event, and that's why they stopped by New England. And so we had some good long conversations about what kind of cars could be part of maybe NACM. If you look down at... Rally Argentina, they not only have the WRC cars that go to Argentina, but Argentina has its own separate, homologated car there that's used by the locals, but it does meet the FIA spec in that it can race at that event. If you look at WRC Mexico right now, because there isn't a separate homologation, they're only running what I think we saw like 20 cars was in
Yeah,
all of
wasn't
WRC Mexico's is horrid,
Yeah.
right? So seemed like Carlos, who we were talking with, was wanting to discuss, maybe there's a way we can work on doing what look at Asia Pacific. They've got the AP4 cars now, right? So again, this is not something that's a straight manufacturer homologated car, but it is a way you can get something homologated and meet an FIA spec to compete in one of their sub championships. Okay, it's not the WRC, but it can at least compete in those events, and it can be a regional class of car. So, anyways, something that maybe we could see in the future. Something like AP4 or whatever the heck it is they call the cars that they build down in Argentina. I can't remember what they call those. But yeah, some very interesting stuff that was discussed in ideas, that I think future conversation could make that a good thing. It would be interesting to see a full North American championship that went from Mexico up into the States, up into Canada, and back around again, or something like that, wouldn't it?
Oh gosh, that would be really cool, wouldn't it?
And
Whoa.
honestly, it's cheaper for the competitors than when they were using Jamaica as one of their rounds, where they have to put the cars in a container, pay shipping for the container to get over there, and then, go back, unload it, super expensive versus plop it on a trailer, drive across the border. Yeah, it takes a lot of time, but it's a hell of a lot cheaper than shipping it. So, anyways, I've again brought this on for long enough, so that was like last little bits. Would love to see NACM have its round here in the States. New England would be cool. That's a great place for it. They've already been using one of the rounds in Canada. I think Baie des Charlets, I think, was one of the NACM rounds. And some sort of new car homologation concept, if we could come up with that, or some sort of rules, anyways, that would be a regional class car that would work for that. That would be cool. Something that's actually realistic for what's driven in North America. So that would be cool too. Anyhow, on that note, I think it's time to end our podcast.
I think so. Yeah, we've covered a lot of ground.
We have. Well, thank you everybody for listening. Again, remember you can follow us on Facebook, on Twitter, on our Instagram account. Leave us a comment, tell us what you think. What stuff do you want to cover? We'll see about if we can get some guests on now that we got another little bit of a break. And on that note, thanks for listening. Have a good day, night, or whatever.
Thank you.